This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
I'm Sean Duffy.
I'm Janice Dean.
I'm Tom Shalhoub, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Tuesday, April 2nd, 2024. I'm Grinnell Scott. Those of us of a certain age remember the Scholastic Aptitude Test, the SAT. It's still here, all digital, and still important for that high school kid who wants an opportunity to get into the best schools.
Decades of research covering millions of students has always shown that these scores help predict success in colleges.
This is the Fox News Rundown, Evening Edition.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
You may not be as old as I am, but I'm sure many of you experienced it in your junior and senior years of high school. After a long week of school, you got up early on a Saturday morning, grabbed as many sharpened number two pencils as you could find, and went off to take the SAT. It was a big deal then, because most colleges used it and other standardized exams like it to evaluate potential students for their schools. The test is still around, but you don't need those number two pencils anymore. It's all digital these days. And some schools are getting back to placing a high priority on results. In short, the Scholastic Aptitude Test has had quite a journey, falling in and out of favor along the way from what it was originally designed to do.
The SAT was started because the most elite colleges in the country found that they really did not have open doors for the vast, vast majority of students.
David Blobaum is director of outreach for the National Test Prep Association, which in part is an advocate for appropriately using standardized tests for assessments and college admissions.
So you really had to go to an elite high school to get into an elite college. And there were just no other doors to get into those elite colleges. The elite colleges had their own standardized tests that students had to take to get in, but those standardized tests had Greek and Latin on them. So it was these standardized tests were not widely available, and they required very esoteric knowledge. So it was really a push from the president of Harvard, who wanted to open up the doors of opportunity to more students, especially very exceptional disadvantaged students. So then the SAT was born out of that mission, and it absolutely succeeded, because suddenly all students, if they knew rhetoric, if they knew vocabulary, if they knew mathematics, reading, data analysis, they could get into some of the top schools in the country. And it worked. Now, then there was an obsession over scores eventually. And, you know, then there was the test prep industry that arose. And the test prep industry did a lot to hurt the understanding of what the tests are. So there were a lot of test prep companies that said, we're going to teach you how to ace the test. We're going to teach you all the tips and tricks to the test. And would say the SAT doesn't test you on anything except how you can take the SAT. All of that is just completely false. And it implanted in the public's mind a very incorrect notion of what the tests are. So what really are the tests? The tests really just are tests of fundamental knowledge and skill that students need in order to succeed both in high school, in college, and in life. That's why decades of research covering millions of students has always shown that these scores help predict success in colleges. So that's why colleges use SAT and ACT scores. And that's why really all schools continue to use some form of standardized test scores. So even those quote unquote test blind colleges like UC Berkeley or Caltech, they call themselves test blind. It's really just virtue signaling. They're just SAT, ACT blind. They still very much want to see other standardized test scores like your AP or your IB exam scores, or even your scores from the American Mathematics Competition. So that's a long way of saying that GPA on its own is insufficient to help determine which students are likely to succeed at a given institution. That has never been more true than today, because today there is more rampant grade inflation than at any other time in U.S. history. The Higher Education Research Institute at UCLA has done an American freshman survey since 1966. In 1966, it was roughly 21% of students going to a four-year BA granting university had an A average in high school. Now, instead of it being only 20% having an A average, it's only 20% don't have an A average who are going on to a four-year BA granting university. So when just over 80% of students in high school who go on to a four-year BA granting university have an A average in high school, how can colleges differentiate between these students who went to one of over 20,000 different high schools in the United States, took classes from different teachers, took different classes, got grades on different GPA scales, not to mention all the schools around the world that send students to schools in the United States? There's no way that colleges can equally compare those students without some common yardstick.
And is that where the SAT now comes in?
Exactly. So there's the, again, mistaken idea in the public's mind that test optional means that test scores are less important. That's not really true. So what does test optional really mean? Test optional means that all students have an equal opportunity to apply with or without a test score. It does not mean at all that students have an equal opportunity to actually get admitted, and certainly not to get the same merit aid or scholarships with and without a test score. We're mostly talking about selective colleges, though, that are rejecting more applicants than they're admitting, because most colleges in the country, they're not selective. They're accepting a majority of people who apply. For those colleges, yeah, you don't really need SAT and ACT scores, but you never really needed SAT and ACT scores. So it was true that for the selective colleges, and especially the highly selective colleges, you needed good SAT and ACT scores in the past. That essentially remains true today, especially if you're just the regular student who doesn't fit a high institutional priority.
Let's go with that, because as I understand it, and in the research we've done, the Ivy League schools are really pushing this and really pushing the SAT as that measuring stick. So what are the folks at Columbia and Harvard and Yale seeing that the folks at North Carolina, Duke, and Michigan aren't?
I would say they're all seeing the same thing. There's just a difference in how honest they are about it. So colleges, when they are test optional, they hide all of their data. Those few schools who have gone back to test required, then they reveal more of their data and show that they were really not truly test optional to begin with. So when Yale went back to requiring test scores, they revealed that they had a 3 times higher admit rate for students who submitted test scores. And so they only had a 2% acceptance rate for students who didn't submit test scores. And who was that 2%? Probably recruited athletes or double legacies or some other student who fit a very high institutional priority who is going to get in with low test scores anyway. So really, it's just those schools who have gone back to test required, they're actually just being honest about basically what they were doing even under test optional admissions.
We're chatting with David Blobaum of the National Test Prep Association. More of our conversation in just a moment. Let's talk a little bit more about the test itself. The biggest difference now than when I took it umpteen years ago is I don't have to have a pocket full of number two pencils now. It's all digital. Is that the biggest difference? What other differences would I see if I were still a student and taking the SAT now?
The SAT has changed multiple times over the years, and personally, I actually think they got it more right than they have in two decades. And I don't just say that because I'm in test prep. I was really not a fan of the last version of the SAT, and I was a vocal not fan of the previous version of the SAT. But this version of the SAT, they actually did so many things right. So number one, it's adaptive. So that means on the first verbal section that students get, it's going to be hard, medium, and easy questions. If you do well, then the test maker said, well, why give the student more easy questions that they're just going to get right? The next section is only hard and medium questions. Same thing, though, if a student doesn't do as well and wasn't getting any hard questions right, why continue to torture the kid with more hard questions that the student's not going to get right? Their next section is just medium and easy difficulty questions. So in that way, it adapts to a student, which is, one, they get a more appropriately customized exam to their performance ability level, but also it's able to cut out the unnecessary questions and make the exam shorter. So instead of being 3 hours long, now it's 2 hours and 14 minutes. It's very significant for students. The passages that students have to read are much shorter. And instead of reading, having to answer 10 to 11 questions on that very long passage, it's just one question per short passage. A lot of people thought that made the test easier. It didn't. They're very dense short passages and very difficult questions. They also brought back more vocabulary. Also, the math section, because it's on a computer, now they've given all students access to an on-screen graphing calculator called Desmos. It's an extremely powerful graphing calculator, more powerful than the handheld graphing calculator you would bring in. So that's good for equity. Everyone has access to that. So really all the changes, shorter on-screen calculator, shorter passages, they're changes that favor students, and I think they're positive changes.
One thing that was always a big deal in getting ready to take the SAT was getting ready to take the SAT, and that's what you're into, test prep. How has that changed?
Luckily, we're in the golden age of information. So yes, I'm in test prep, but I really feel passionate about education itself. And I think anyone who is ethical in test prep, they're focused on education. So it used to be that a lot of test prep providers were just trying to pitch tips and tricks. You're not going to get significant increases on the SAT or ACT just from tips or tricks. You really have to fundamentally improve your skills and your knowledge on these core, on this core content. And because we're in a golden age of information, all students can get free test prep these days. So for the SAT, all students can log on to Khan Academy and get free SAT tutoring. And then for the ACT, all students who are on fee waivers, meaning they don't need to pay for the test, that's 20% of students, they can then get free test prep. And for both tests, students on fee waivers get to take the test for free as well.
A couple of other quick questions I have for you. You mentioned the SAT. Also, you mentioned the ACT. Is there a significant difference between either test that both changed for the better in your eyes?
It's a great question. So the primary difference between the SAT and ACT is pacing. The ACT is going to try and lower your score by rushing you, but the questions are more straightforward. The SAT gives you more time per question, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to do better because the questions are trickier. They're more abstract. So what all students should do is go to collegeboard.com. That's the official website of the SAT. Take a practice SAT, see how you do on it. Go to ACT.org. That's the official ACT website. Download and print an official past ACT. Take that. Compare your scores on each. See which one you do better on, and then practice and prep for that test.
Last question I have for you, and it's a little bit of a lighthearted question, because back when I took the SAT, it was always that feather in your cap when you could say, I got a perfect score on the SAT. Is that still possible?
Is it possible to get a perfect score on the SAT?
Yes.
It's possible to get a perfect score on the SAT. I mean, it's, you are in the, you know, we're talking like 0.01, maybe 0.001% of the population if you can get a perfect score on the SAT. Because again, these tests are extremely hard. They require a lot of content knowledge if you're going to get a perfect score on the SAT.
Well, if you are out there and you're going to take the SAT, you've got a lot to look forward to. It's all digital now, so good luck.
David,
David Blobaum is Director of Outreach for the National Test Prep Association. David, thank you so much for joining us on the Fox News Rundown Evening Edition.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter, and I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.